Well, hello everyone. It is Garrett Marigut. I'm so excited to be with you today. We are going to have a special guest. We are joined by Maria Weda. She is a world-class copywriter for B2B SaaS companies, and we're happy to have you. Say hi to the camera, Maria.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for having me on, Garrett.
Awesome. Well, excited to be with you today. Before we get started, maybe can you tackle the idea for everybody of what copywriting means in 2020 and maybe kind of bring us up to speed? When we say copywriting, like, what does that mean in your mind these days?
Yeah, these days it's all about taking the product or innovative idea you have and sharing it with your clients in a way that makes sense, is appropriate, and actually gets them just as excited about it as you are.
I love that. So I sometimes get like, I don't know if it's classical or what, but have you ever read like Confessions of an Advertising Man, like some of the stuff Ogilvy did?
Mm-mm.
Okay, so a lot of, you know, my thoughts of copywriting, and it's weird where we got to today, is back then, right, when you did an ad, you had a copywriter write the ad, and the ad was like a landing page, very informative, like copy sold. So you'd see these like ads full of copy, like describing the product. Do you do any type of like copywriting these days to support advertising? Like, is that something that copywriting is associated with, or how does that go?
I write blog posts, which is typically classified under content marketing. But the reason why I, as a copywriter, do them is because I know a lot of the time content marketing isn't optional anymore, especially with Google and SEO and everything. And they're made to be both a marketing tool and a sales tool, in my opinion, at least the good ones are. So that's my perspective on it.
I love it. Now, this is Sour and Sass. And so before we go any further, do you have your sour candy?
I do. Right here. Let me get in view of camera. Sour Fools. Airheads.
The Airheads. Okay. I have the Warheads. So we both have heads.
Oh my God.
All right. Are you nervous? Are you ready? Do you do sour candy? Yeah. Like, I only do it on this show. So like once
like
a week.
I like sour candy, but I'm still scared.
Okay, good. Let's see. Ready?
I'm going to do two. Okay.
All right. You're doing two? You're making me look bad. Oh,
get on my level, Garrett.
I know, seriously. Mm-hmm. Okay, so everybody kind of has a blog these days. So like when I started Directive, like 7 years ago, it's always so sour. Blog post was like 300 words, and it was just like barf on a page. And it was like, write a blog post, three keywords, and we rank. So now as we're going into, I think, a much more informed content marketer who gets, I think the average knowledge of SEO has drastically increased over the last 3 to 5 years.
Absolutely.
So what's your take on research? And so what I mean, when people are doing blog content, do you believe, where do they start? Do they start with the keyword research? Do they start with the brand? Do they start with the audience? Like, where do they start? Because I believe that where you start with your content really, at least strategically, like from a strategy standpoint, you look at somebody and said, hey, this is what we want our blog to accomplish. And I found that like content marketers go to audience and SEOs go to keyword research. And like, there's like these crazy things. What do you think is the best way of doing it?
For me, it starts with the goals, really. I mean, because that's going to determine the entire research process, workflow, like what you write about, how you write about it. So starting with your goals for the blog post, that, and they have to tie back into your big picture business goals too. Sorry, just to hit me again. You get like the waves of like, oh, yeah. I'm sure I'm making great faces right now. So it really depends. I mean, if your goal is to rank higher in Google, if you want to be those first page results, the go-to resource, yes, you need to be focusing on keyword research first, because you have to find that intersection between what is it my audience actually needs help with and what is challenging enough that it gets searched for keyword-wise, but not oversaturated, of course. So kind of basic there. But if your goal is something a little bit more ambiguous, like perhaps just creating a place for entertainment, or like you want to be the place where your audience fires up the computer, they have their coffee, and it's the first thing they read before they even check their email, then we're talking more about entertainment. And I think that type of research lends itself to, okay, what other genres of entertainment does your audience listen to? And that's more audience research based. So those are just a couple examples. But yeah, I think it all starts with the goals and then you go from there.
Yeah, no, I love that. And what I think about a lot though too, I think this is really interesting. I'd love to get your perspective on it, is when you look at content influencers, like content that's widely influencing culture, that's really doing what we're trying to do with content. Like, it's hitting a business goal, but it's also having an impact and influence on our brand. You can look at somebody like Morning Brew, right? Like, world-class newsletter, but zero SEO. But they're literally a content company. On the other side, you can look at somebody like Barstool Sports, a content company, zero SEO.
Right.
And so what I've noticed is all the content, like business, McKinsey, they don't rank for nothing really. Right. So like all the content I like isn't doing it for SEO.
Mm-hmm.
And as someone who sells SEO, it was kind of enlightening to me to see that you can almost like bastardize your content marketing strategy and process by elevating keyword research too high in your strategy, because it's like you start doing content for the wrong reasons. So like, how do we get content for the right reasons? Like, how do we get content that builds an audience? How do we get content that drives community? How do we get content that drives brand? Because that's really what content's about in its simplest form. Like, how do we do that and SEO instead of SEO and try to do that? Because I don't think you can do SEO and then try to get that. So how do you do audience, brand, content, and then make it SEO? Like, what's that difference that people should be thinking about?
I think it's all about tone and the quality of the writing itself. I mean, we all know what an SEO bot looking written post is. That's clearly like, we're just putting this on our website and stuffing, right? Versus something that's just like kind of you describe, really high quality content, but there's kind of no, you know, SEO results. So I think in terms of the quality of the writing, like the best advice I could give, I'm like trying to think off the top of my head right now, is like, definitely think, you know, if you are your audience, or you have, if you're the writer and you have a really clear understanding of what the audience enjoys, writing as if you are them or writing as if you are speaking to them. I find that posts that perform really well for the stuff that I do for my clients is often has a tone of, hey, I'm a really informed friend taking you out for a cup of coffee. I'm going to explain these high level concepts to you, not in a way that's dumbing it down, but in a way that's casual and informative at the same time. And that breeds a level of confidence, but it also brings up interesting information. Now, some companies, especially B2B, like, you need to keep that professional tone. And that's something you can definitely incorporate depending on the words you use, the way you do your punctuation, et cetera. But in terms of finding that intersection, I think being able to be a good storyteller, speaking in a way that is friendly for your audience, like that coffee example I gave you. And also, like, again, it goes back to understanding, like, what do people like? Like, if you do have separate from what they're buying your product for, I think that's a big thing too. Like, definitely have product promotional posts on your blog. That's very important. Have your calls to action, have your product features. All of that is great. But I think there should be at least 10% of your content, ideally, again, depending on the goals, should be stuff that has outside interests involved or supports needs that are outside of what your product offers. Like a project manager, maybe giving them tips on how to move up in their field and get a better job, or however that works. Or on the other end, if you have people who are interested in murder podcasts, why not throw a fun, like, top 10 murder podcasts you haven't heard about yet post in there? Just depends, but you get the idea.
I get what you're saying. Now, I think one of the things is, I've seen B2B and myself do so wrong, is we put professionalism on a pedestal. Right? So we go back to all the brands we like and the people we read, like, they're professional because of how succinct they are at using their tone wisely, not because they have a professional tone.
Yes.
Like, you get what I'm saying? Like, the Morning Brew isn't professional, yet they're better than everyone else. That makes them professional. Like, the design might, like, the layout's professional. Mm-hmm. Like, the clarity of the writing's professional, but the copy itself. So, like, how do you, like, think B2B companies can better define a tone so that you actually remember them or care about them? Like, what do B2B companies need to think about when thinking about tone?
I think probably one of the biggest things is figuring out what already exists in the marketplace as far as content created for them. And that includes content by competitors and content by educational resources that they're likely checking out anyway. So finding out first, what is the landscape of tone? Is it silly sketches that they post on YouTube and then write a little write-up underneath and they're sharing that? Or is it like deep, in-depth, technical guides, downloadable guides, all that stuff? So finding what is the landscape of the content that's being offered right now, and then going and looking at what seems to be working. And that requires a lot of back-end research about the competitor and their SEO, and looking at trends right now, because depending on when their content is published and when it's popular, all that good stuff. So doing that back-end research and seeing, okay, what's performing best for the people who are doing the best job at this. And during that process, you can also look at your own likes and dislikes. Like, what stands out to you? What are the top qualities you're seeing patterns across all of these different brands that I'm competing with? And on top of that, what do I like? So you have those kind of two lists going. And then finally doing the SEO research, figuring out, okay, what's most competitive right now? What are people missing? And where do I fill that gap?
No, I love that. And I can't help but think, though, so much of what we do in content marketing today that I see, and you know, I struggle with myself, is like, compare. We go like, oh, they're doing it really good. We do it. Oh, Skyscraper works for you. We'll do it. Oh, this works. We'll do it. Is there any room for people to be a pirate? Like, is there any world, like, is there any room left for like content marketing? Like, people, because I just can't imagine the world needs another Skyscraper. Like, the world doesn't need, like right now, the genuine, honest to God, like, I'm on the speaker circuit and someone goes up on the stage and they're like, there's a post that has 18 reasons why, and then their recommendation is write 28 reasons why. Mm-hmm. And that's strategy. But to me, that's tactics and not strategy. So like, how do we start to get strategic with our content and get away from just being tactical? Like, hell yeah, you need this many internal links, you need this many words. And we can talk about that later, but how do we get away from the just like the tactics of trying to make a blog post rank to trying to build an audience? Because I think those are two entirely different goals. And what do you think these B2B SaaS companies should have? Should they just be trying to drive MQLs, or should they be trying to build an audience? Like, what do you think? Because I don't know. I know that they're correlated, but they're not necessarily in how you go about it. So what's your take there?
Fair enough. Yeah. On the pirate note, I will say there is that famous quote, steal like an artist. And I do think there's a bit of an artistic, there is an artistic element. I think writing, even copy, I think there is art to it. But to answer your question, I think, you know, the biggest thing is bringing your own unique voice and personality to whatever you're doing. And that's on an individual level. And this is why you have to have creators on your team who have a strong sense of self that comes through copy. And I know that seems counterintuitive because we're talking about products, but this is really where you're leaning on your team. Because again, yes, you see everything that's out there, you look at all the tactics, but you have to then find out where your expertise, your unique point of view, your unique experiences can be woven into those narratives and elevate them more. What's not being spoken about in this conversation? What needs to be highlighted? What stories are not being told that would actually really support the content that's already out there, rather than just, all right, copy paste, that's the title we'll go with this week. Great. You know?
Yeah, no. Well, talking about titles, like, how important are those? Like, how long should people be thinking about spending time on their title? Like, is that way more important than we're giving it credit? Is it less important? Like, where does writing titles kind of like, how, like, what should we be doing with that?
I think that you should have a style guide for your titles. So especially if you have a team of writers, or if you hire someone like me, like, I'm going to be creating a consistent format. But I mean, I've read writers who say like, you should be spending 2 hours creating your titles. And I'm like, oh, okay. Sounds like a waste of your budget to me. But I think that they're important because you need to get interest, right? And they also, including keywords, you know, basics. I don't think you need to spend all day on them. I think you need to know best practices and you need to do A/B testing. And one of the best ways is after you publish your article, especially sharing it via social media, And trying out what alternative headlines could be. And when you're doing your 6-month audit, 1-year audit, quarterly audit, depending, it's good to go back and look and see, okay, these posts that aren't getting as much click-throughs as possible, however, they're in content categories that are really performing well for us. What if we go back and maybe adjust the title, maybe adjust the URL? That's more advanced SEO stuff. I'm sure some SEO auditors are probably like, what are you? That's just my POV.
Yeah,
but
I love it.
You show up, right? Mm-hmm. It's day one, and they're like, you know, Maria, what do you think we should do with our content? And they've been doing content, let's say, for 3-5 years. And do you go through and update old blog posts, consolidate posts? Do you focus on new posts and kind of ignore the past? Kind of like, where if we're like, you know, showing up in a new, and we show up as, you know, content marketing manager, demand gen manager, day one, and we want to build a content strategy. Do we look to the past to figure out our future, or we just kind of like forget the past and create a future from scratch? Like, what's kind of your approach there with like repurposing content, things like that?
Yeah, specifically with the services that I offer through the Unicorn Blog Package, what I like to do is go through existing content, figure out what if, you know, getting access to analytics, taking a look at what's working, getting a good idea of where they've been and where they want to go, and finding what that bridge is and creating a content plan from there. I do think that although I don't currently offer it, I might start offering it. I do think that ignoring the past is probably not a good idea, especially if you're already ranking on first page results for certain keywords. And doing an audit will help you figure out, okay, here's some posts that need to be updated, either longer, better information, or whatever. That's something I can also help with, both with identifying them and updating them and putting that on your calendar, in addition to new material. For my package right now, I do focus on creating new material and getting you moving in that direction you needed to go, creating that bridge between the old and the new. Because the only way you can do that is with additional content or updating old content. But I do think a holistic view is probably going to get you the best results.
Yeah, I like that. And then, so we show up day one, tactics and all that stuff is going right. And we'll talk about that in a second, but KPIs, what should we be tracking to know if we're performing well? Like, are there leading indicators like traffic or social shares or like repeat visitors? What do you think is like that primary KPI that's just content centric? Like, if people are engaging, liking our content, business metrics aside, just content, like, well, what do you think is that number one thing we should be focused on?
I think my favorites are number of click-throughs, so people actually getting to the page, and also time on page. Of course, if you have shorter blog posts, like 750 words or less, that time on page is going to be different. But my goal when writing something is to write something interesting enough and informative enough that person by the end, especially if it's their first time visiting, thinks to themselves, okay, this is really great. I wonder what else is on here. And then they go to the next post and go to the next post and go to the next post, just keeping them on and engaged. So in terms of KPIs, I think in just very generally that, but you're going to hear me sound like a broken record. I'm all about connecting it back to goals. So if you're trying to use your blog to build your social media accounts, if that's your next quarterly goal, great. Then we're going to be looking at those social KPIs. So yeah.
I love that. Okay. Now you talked a little bit about word count. Actually, first, more sour candy time.
Oh yeah, that's right. I already finished my other one. How's that going for you? What flavors do you have going?
I have, okay, so I'm doing like mango melon and it's going, but oh my God, it's sour. Like,
really?
Oh my God, it's so sour.
I think I lucked out a little bit. I'm going to put my phone down momentarily to reopen my bag that's somehow closed. Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah, I think I lucked out a little bit because this gauge, how do I get this in view? Is like, yeah, no, this sour gauge is like yellow, but it could be red. So I didn't get the red.
Whatever red is, this is red.
That's what you have. Okay. Right. Cheers.
Let's do it. Cheers. Okay.
Great.
Oh my God.
So
you said something about 700 words.
Yeah.
A lot of people now are like 1,500 words is the blog post now. Or I'll be like 2,000. So it'll be like 1,250.
Is there a word count that you're actually seeing work better? Should we ignore word count? How should we approach word count?
Word count matters, but it matters less than quality of post for sure. You can have a 2,500 word post and still not rank as highly if there are other posts that are getting more click-throughs on the first page. We know that. My standard is 1,500 words. I think that that does work well, regardless of the category. If you do a little, because I use SEO tools to kind of analyze, okay, what the commonalities between the first page results, and if I do see a trend of like, okay, it looks like the posts are really more than 2,000 words for this or 2,500, and that seems there's a correlation between the ranking and popularity versus that word count, then I'll go, okay, you know what? We need to beef this up a little bit with an interview or anything else that's going to make it stand out. But that is when I think it's important. There are sometimes you'll find like the top ranking posts are, less than 750 words or like 300 words, depending. But I think like across the board, regardless of what you're doing, I am finding that the 1500 is pretty solid for all of my clients.
So if someone, and you probably deal this with all the time, it's something I found very interesting is you get a software client. And they sell to developers, like many of them do, and they automatically assume that you can't write on their industry.
That's fun.
How fair is that assessment? Is there a way to learn a new industry and create content that works for their brand? Is that something where you have to stay out of technical industries? Like, what's your take on technical products, people who sell to a technical customer outsourcing content. Is that a good idea, a bad idea? I mean, obviously, I think you might have your own perspective given your business, but what have you found in all honesty?
Full disclosure, I'm obviously this is I'm the person you're outsourcing towards, so I'm going to be biased, but in my experience, if there's ever been a knowledge gap for me, the way to close that is speaking to the team. And doing expert interviews. So I can always incorporate a POV from someone on the team or in your network who really, really knows what they're talking about. Also, I think if you have really good research skills, it's not that hard. So that's definitely something to consider. I've been really fortunate. I'm trying to think of like what's like a takeaway someone else can use because, not to toot my own horn, but I have gotten compliments on like, wow, this is your first time writing about this. Oh, that's as, sounds like I wrote it. And I've been in this industry longer than you. So there is a little bit of having a knack for it as far as like applying that skill set. I think it's, I also make a habit of following popular newsletters and blogs in that space so that I'm caught up on whatever those trends are anyway. So if I have a long-term client sign, like I'm going to be keeping up with their industry anyway, interviewing experts anyway. And I mean, as long as you have someone on the content marketing team like reviewing the information, if they do find a discrepancy of like, hey, actually, this piece of information might be outdated, or I have a different perspective on it. That's fine. They just let me know, I work it in, and they approve it.
I love that. Now, and this isn't to be anti-blog post.
Okay.
However,
I'm waiting.
I've seen that there can sometimes be like diminishing marginal returns on a net new blog piece compared to functional content. So what I've found as I'm doing research, I'm working with a lot of SaaS companies, right? And we're doing these campaigns, is that like, if I'm working, let's say, with an HR company, and I could do a blog post for them, or I could build out a massive library of job interview templates and then directly correlate job interview templates to the product that has a feature related to job, things like that, then the functional content, like this kind of like product-centric content that I can do at scale, like resource hubs, like glossaries, templates, tools, things like that, I'm finding are outperforming at an MQL level blog post. Now, it requires more creative, more dev, depth and scale.
Design, yeah.
Yeah, it's a bigger campaign, but I'm driving more MQLs from that. I'm doing both for them, right? And I'm seeing that I'm driving more value out of this types of functional content. What's your take on like that high-level campaign-centric like build-out of like, you know, you're working with a DevOps client and then the biggest, largest list of free APIs or, you know, like those kinds of, and they're more like you have custom hubs, there's dev work, it's all has like subfolders. What's your take on like functional content versus blog content, you know, going the rest of the year?
Yeah, I think blog content can support functional content and vice versa. I love to see blog posts that have those downloadables, those email captures, all that good stuff. I think it elevates it and helps people return to that source because, of course, they're going to like lose the template in their inbox eventually. They'll come back to your post and be like, oh, great. Where is that again? So I actually do find myself writing a lot of content that is a guide for, let's just say, how to be an event planner for hotels, right? So if I'm writing a guide for that, I do find that we will focus on calls to action that will be those free downloadable guides, those templates, et cetera. So in that way, I think it can support it. It's also additional information. Not templates are amazing. I really love them. And also, they're not always the solution to the problem. Like sometimes you do need that background information. Sometimes you do need help understanding the context. So depending on the topic, you know, it could go either way. I love to see both in an overall marketing plan. But like you said, like it is efficient to create blog posts consistently. It might be inefficient to complete those other products consistently.
So it's like my brain, right? Like this is kind of how like I think of content. I'd love to get your take on. So like if I'm working like with an event planning software or something like that, I'm gonna immediately do something like do the keyword research, do the audience research, and then come back and say like, here is the checklist that we can do for every type of event: wedding planning checklist, bachelorette planning checklist, bachelor party checklist. Right, and now I've got this whole hub of checklists, and then I'm like, cool. Now we need to do best restaurants to cater in every city that has major population to where we have users. And now I have this other resource hub. Next thing you know, right, I'm building out this massive almost like database of like functional content that ties back into the product use case. What's your take on a strategy like that compared to like a typical blog strategy?
I think that really works. I think that I actually find that those checklists are part of a typical blog strategy. Maybe it's just been like what I've been working on with my clients, but I think that that's really great. I mean, especially if you're already seeing results from it. I'm also a big believer in if you have something that's working, double down on that and cut the fat elsewhere. But yeah, I think that's a really smart idea. I think also if you want to have those templates and you want them to rank for SEO, it's boosting that word count and giving supplementary information that is really high value. So, I mean, we want people to use the templates, but we also want people to be bookmarking the site, sharing the site on social media, emailing it to a friend and being like, this is really great. You should check this out. And I think that, you know, as useful as the resources, you can always use that little extra push. And also, you know, whatever's working for you, keep going that direction.
I love that. I love that. Now, in closing, people are like tuning in today and they're thinking, okay, you know, like we've had this blog forever. I know blogs are important, but like it's just not working for me the right way. What's the number one tip you have for everyone listening to get their blog on track? Right? Because it was this thing that was hot. And then it like it's still not that it's cold. It's like it's just that it's there. You know, like the older thing that you just like, it's like I know I gotta get to it, but it's in the corner. So like what can people do today that should can motivate them to get back to their blog, to bring it back to life? Like what's that one tip in your mind where they can really go kind of start turning it into a revenue generator for their business?
That's a really great question. They should be doing a full blog audit so they can get an idea of where they are. And that includes like building out your spreadsheet of links, doing an analysis of how those are doing in SEO, looking for what is still popular regardless of when it was published. And then again, pulling all that data and figuring out, okay, so what is working for me? How can I use that moving forward? What of these posts are dragging this down and I can delete? What of these posts have a URL that's ranking really highly? I think if you were to just like wipe it clean, you'd be losing that SEO that, like, if especially if it's been on your site for a really long time, that's really valuable. That's, you know, that's space in the marketplace you're already taking up. Why would you just pull yourself from the race right now? So I think doing that full blog audit, Looking at your links, looking at the SEO, looking at the rankings, and understanding that even if it's been dormant for a little bit, you probably still have a lot of valuable stuff going on. There's no reason to just completely abandon it. You can start from where you are and move forward.
Love that. I love that. So thank you so much, Maria. We are at our
Thank
time.
you.
In closing, how can people get a hold of you? How can people kind of follow up and kind of interact with you?
Yeah, sure. You can just go to my website, www.sassycopywriting.com, and that's sassy, of course, spelled CFC. Wow, this is where I'm at. Sassy. Those sour candies did something to my head. I'll tell you what.
They're great. They're so it's nuts. Well, thank you for being with us. Thank you for doing the sour
Thanks for
candy. And
having me.
that is Sour and Sass.
Thank you so much.